wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be. Welcome to the Signal to Noise podcast on ProSound Web, sponsored by Blue Microphones. I'm Keith Clark, editor of ProSound Web and LiveSound International, joined by my co-host, Michael Lawrence, who's the technical editor of PSW and LSI.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? The music you heard on the way in was Break Free by Mike Green. You can hear more from Mike at mikegreen.bandcamp.com.
We're joined this time by Bernie Broderick, who earlier this year founded Truth in Audio, a unique academy that's joining forces with manufacturers and a diverse variety of experienced professionals from many facets of pro audio. And they're going to be providing industry-sponsored technical training. He's obviously well-suited for this venture, having served as a trainer for some of the largest manufacturers, such as L-Acoustics, EAW, and others, over several decades. And he's bringing that expertise plus more to the new venture. We've provided a link on the podcast page to a profile on Bernie that will tell you a lot more about him. In addition to discussing truth in audio and audio education in general, Bernie will be sharing some more details on a very interesting project he's undertaken over the past several months under the Hot Rod division of his organization. It's a sonic resto mod of an EAW KF750 series rig. So let's get started. Welcome, Bernie, and thanks so much for giving us your time today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Yeah, let's start at the truth in audio point. Could you fill us in more on what exactly you're doing?
Well, yeah, I'd love to. Truth in Audio is really a company, more of a blanket name. The Academy is a portion of Truth in Audio, but that's why it's not called the Truth in Audio Training Academy. It's called Truth in Audio. And I wanted to very early on not paint myself into a corner, because obviously this industry is incredibly dynamic. There's lots of places where I felt a well bracketed company could be of assistance. So I didn't really know what we would become. All I knew was that the name and the internal mandate of the company, we could rest on that. And no matter what we did going forward, we could establish ourselves under that banner. So that's where the Truth in Audio company came from. But my efforts were obviously focused very heavily towards education, because that's, as you've mentioned, that's what I've been doing for a very, very long time. And we are set now to launch the one wing, I guess you could call it, of Truth in Audio, which is the Training Academy, coming up here very, very shortly.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be actually going on site, right? You're a mobile operation, actually going out to places.
Yeah, we had a couple of reasons for wanting to become mobile. But we're not going to be just mobile, but I'll explain that part first. As you mentioned in the introduction, we're aligning ourselves with professional sound equipment manufacturers. And in that regard, we have kind of two different streams here. One, we're an educational facility for, budding or even experienced, people working in the live sound industry. But the flip side to that is we are a marketing vehicle for pro audio manufacturers, because obviously they have, a different need in this industry. And we wanted to be able to present something to them that that showed ROI, return on investment. And so the concept of being mobile had multiple facets to it. Number one, we have a couple of large vehicles that become rolling billboards for manufacturers. So their logos are displayed, even the Live Sound logo being on there as well. And so the other thing was to be able to get to people. So there's a lot of people that would love to attend something like this, something like what we're doing, but the thoughts of, flights and hotels and meals and everything makes it just cost prohibitive, and that works against us. We want to have reach. We want to be able to get to people and get them, you know, indoctrinated into what it is we're doing. And we felt that this was a cost reduction effort on our part for potential students.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are you going to be focusing on curriculum-wise, you know, topics? I mean, how are you going at this? What are you going to address? And, you know, maybe a little bit more about how you're going to do that.
Well, I think we could all agree that there's no lack of opportunities in at least in the United States for people to learn about technical topics. There are already a couple of you know, good substantiated what we call objective training opportunities that exist in the market. Plus, there's a plethora of manufacturer-backed trainings. I saw that there was something missing here. There was a core kind of piece that I felt I could have some impact with. And as I was starting to flesh this out, I realized that it's funny because let me just tell you this one story. I talked to a couple of mentors, a couple of dear friends of mine in the very beginning as I was putting these concepts together. And I was really asking them their opinion because I wanted them to tell me I was crazy and to not do this because it would have been the easy out, right? So, but what happened was, is the first couple of people I spoke to said, how can I help you? How can I be of assistance? Because this is an amazing idea you have here and I would love to be involved. And so we created this contributor group of high-profile veterans in our industry. These guys are from all walks of the live sound industry, and it keeps growing. So it turned into a wisdom camp. So we had all of these industry pros that all had, obviously, technical chops, but they also had a lot of wisdom about our industry and how it works. So this kind of morphed my plan a little bit, and so now what we've settled on, which I'm so thrilled to talk about, is the school is based on both objective and subjective technical training, but is a path from beginning to end to help people with their career. This is something that deviates from any type of training you've probably ever witnessed, but we're going to be heavily focused on not only teaching you technical aspects of equipment, but also giving you guidance as to how you can improve your presence in the industry, the steps you could take to earn a better living, things like that. So it's a real kind of, and I have this group of contributors that I tap into. So it's not just coming from me. It's not a single person. It's coming from a larger group of very experienced people. I vet just about everything off of various people in the group. So that's the core of the training. I mean, the core spirit or the core philosophy of the training. And then we have broken this into four levels. So you can start at the beginning. Everybody has to start at the beginning, no matter what your experience level, because we all want to be, you know, singing from the same hymn book, and we all want to have, and what I really want to have is I want to have more experienced people sitting next to lesser experienced people in the classrooms, so that when something is talked about where maybe they don't understand it a little bit, they can lean to somebody and say, hey, you know, did you get that? And then having this kind of mixed group of experience in the class is going to help everybody. I want a real team, you know, a real group team spirit happening inside the classroom. So level one is foundational. We call it foundational. Level two is an intermediate class. And so we call that an operational level. So by the time you've completed level two, which looks like it'll be a 5-day course, you can go out and proficiently do, many different types of jobs on a show site. Level three is what we would refer to as an advanced level. And this will be real propeller head stuff. Math, modeling, system design, large scale. And then level four is what we refer to as masterclass. And that has a duality to it in that it will allow individuals that we basically handpick to work in small groups directly with their peers. So my contributor group. So if you wanted to learn how to mix from one of our, contributors as a high level pro, we will organize that together. Or if you want to be a high-level systems tech, we will put you together with those people to learn more in smaller groups and highly focused. But the flip side to that is that goes straight back to our contributor group. That, you know, we will probably end up having like a small fee as being the organizers, but I wanted to give it back to the people that contributed to us. So these, you know, a lot of these guys are looking for segues as they age to get off the road and do something. A lot of them are very interested and keen on training people. So we would then become a funnel for them to say, yeah, you've got, you know, three guys this week, you've got two guys next week, however it pans out. My plan is to give that back to the people that have so graciously contributed to establishing the company and the school itself.
So do you have any testing or certification, you know, with these various levels? I mean, how do you just cover it and assume, or how do you verify, I guess?
Level one, no, because it's a foundational level, and it's an opportunity to get your feet wet. And to kind of wrap your head around our industry and understand, you know, we want you to know, is this even right for you? Is this the right industry? I mean, think about not only rental companies or people who are already, you know, doing sound in clubs or things like that, but think about high school people. Think about the guys that walk into music stores and, you know, and see a sign that says, you know, you can learn to be a live sound engineer. I mean, we're after those people as well. We're heavily after those people because we can grab them, you know, right as they exit high school. We don't anticipate, there's certificates of completion right now for level one. As we rise in levels, yes, there will be testing that's involved. Certainly by level three, there will be some heady testing that will, you know, indicate that you have not only attended the class, but you have passed some pretty stringent test criteria.
Mm-hmm. So do you have some place we can send folks if they want to get more information or inquire or ask questions, you know, anything along those lines?
Yeah, of course. So there's the Truth in Audio website. It's www.truthinaudio.com, but with hyphens. So truth-in-audio.com. And the reason why the hyphens are there is because somewhere in our early stages of setting up our web address, somebody swiped our Truth in Audio name and then tried to sell it back to us. So we told them where the sun didn't shine. And And you can keep it because this is a very small industry and we don't see much, you know, monetary value in having that name without the hyphens. So there's hyphens mm-hmm. in our name.
Yeah.
And it gives you a pretty good, again, the website keeps growing. Obviously, it's all brand new. So there's material and stuff being added. We just did our first video blog, which I plan to do on a regular basis, which kind of gives, you know, additional information and things like that about our industry and thoughts and so on. So it'll be a very, very broad website. We will also be hosting videos there. So this is a great part of our larger term plan, our longer term plan, in that all of these people that live in remote countries and stuff will be able to go in and sign up to be able to access the same curriculum that we will be presenting in physical form in training sessions. So anybody that, you know, lives in a remote area of the world, you know, don't fret. If you will be able to access this information through a paid program on our website, and we'll also be hosting all of our students' bios on our website. So a quick reference for rental companies or tours, we'll be able to go in and see what the, you know, what the training level of an individual is and be able to contact that person to employ them. That's our goal, is to get these people employed and to help them make more money.
You know, one thing I really love, Bernie, what you're saying about, you know, going out and getting all these different people and sort of having them all come in to the same table and offer their perspective, you know, that multiple perspective idea, I think is so important to training, to best practices, to learning from people that have actually been out there and done it. It's something that Keith and I talk a lot about in terms of how do we want to present, you know, a certain topic. And, it, you know, Jim Yakubuski, who we just had on a couple episodes ago, you know, it's so funny because him and I get these really long emails going about something like Oxfed subs, and, you know, here's the way I would do it, and here's the way he would do it, and it's so much a part of everyone's got their own recipe, and so, you know, the idea let's understand the principles that are at play here, and let's understand the pros and cons of these different approaches, and then, you know, there's the beauty that Jim would come in and give you something completely different than what I would give you, and they're both valid, and they're both going to help you solve certain problems, and that's such an important part of the education thing is that, you know, obviously we all have our own filter and our own experience, and that's going to come out in how we're teaching. But, you know, to be able to say, well, here's my concept of this, and here's this person's concept of this. And I think that's just – it's such a good thing for the student to be able to sort of view that through different lenses and really make their own judgment call on what's being presented. I think that's such a key thing. So I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah. Is this a good time to say that Jim Yakubuski is one of our contributors?
It's a great time. Yeah, yeah. Jim's great. We love him.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that's I guess that's where the objective and subjective, you know, title comes from. So it's exactly everything you said. You know, there are a set of rules that we work within inside of live sound. Of course, you know, physics are physics, and that's never going to change. But there's so many different approaches to doing the same thing, and we're not judgmental. We're not telling you this is the only way you can do something. As a matter of fact, we're the complete opposite to that. What we want is a melting pot of ideas that you can draw from and say, well, you know, maybe split left right subwoofers are not the best idea, but sometimes you don't get a choice. So if you are pushed into doing something like that, which acoustically, you know, creates its own scenarios, here's the best way to manage it. And I think that that's kind of the template that we're going to be operating on, not to say, we'll obviously tell you what we think best practice is, but given that you don't get to use best practice, what is the triage to whatever it is that you have to do? And I can only obtain that level of knowledge from a larger group of people. I can't do that under a microscope, you know, with only one or two people. There's just too much out there.
Yeah. You know, another thing I think is really important about it sort of dovetails between the under the hood mechanics, having the tool set, understanding acoustics, understanding comb filtering versus the hands-on approach. Just to use one example, like, you know, two things I've heard in the last 24 hours are I use a delayed copy of my signal routed back through the line array to cancel the bounce off the back wall, which sounds crazy. And, well, I like to take all my measurements with the reference mic pointing away from the speaker. Those both sound like completely crazy things, but one of them is totally valid and one of them is totally not. And so how, you know, you can't just go by this gut, oh, that sounds wacky to me. Well, if you have a tool set of understanding these principles, you can really go down that road and say, well, here's how I know this will work, or here's how I know this won't work. And likewise, this sort of sandbox idea that I think is really needed in training. And another, you know, great part about you being mobile and being able to take all of your class equipment and all of your stuff that you need, take it to the students. Idea of, you know, there's what happens if I point it this way? What happens if I do this? And there's a lot of people that go on forums and just go, oh, I don't know. You shouldn't probably do that because no one tries it.
Nobody tries it.
Go try it. Go see what happens. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so,
yeah.
So I can tell you what happens if you turn your measurement mic a different way. Pretty much nothing, you know, and you can test that.
Yeah.
Really encouraging that sandbox idea of, well, here are the tools. Let's examine this together and see what happens. And that's another great part of the group dynamic that you maybe don't get, in a self-study situation, for example.
Yeah. We're trying to convince people that, you know, and I said it in my first video blog that I did, was because you know how to operate something doesn't necessarily mean you know how it works.
Right.
So we want to teach you how stuff works, and then the operating part of it becomes a lot more easy, first of all. But second of all, there's plenty of user manuals, right? There's plenty of factory education where you could go into, you know, a variety of different manufacturers and learn how to push the buttons or learn how to use the software. but do you truly understand what it is that you're looking at and why it's being represented in such a fashion? And this is where I think we will provide a huge service to manufacturers in the industry. So this is a kind of a great dovetail into that is, you know, for over 20 years, I stood in front of people, you know, talking about complex topics. And every single class that I did, I basically burned out the first day going through fundamentals, right? So when I first started training with VDOSK back in 1999, you know, we were coming out of a world of point and shoot loudspeaker systems. I mean, the concepts of computer modeling of any kind, really, or even understanding the physics of how a loudspeaker worked, were rare. I mean, Meyer was one of the original purveyors of education in the industry, but, you know, unless you were a Meyer guy, you probably didn't get access to that. The one thing I recognized was that every single training I had to do, somehow, somewhere, I had to go back to the basics. I had to talk about point source. I had to talk about phase and wavelength. And so for the manufacturers of, you know, the people who come out of these trainings will have that foundational knowledge, because I can speak from my own experience and say a manufacturer would much rather focus on what makes their products unique than to teach somebody how sound works or how sound behaves. That doesn't change from manufacturer to manufacturer. That's a known quantity. So when we have sponsors that join us from the manufacturing side of the industry, one of the benefits that they get back from being involved with us and supporting this process is we're going to be churning out more knowledgeable base of people that when they do encounter your new product or when they do see your stuff at a trade show or some demo and you start giving them your pitch on what makes your products unique, they're going to understand what you're talking about and they're going to be able to absorb it and create logic in their minds as to the merits of what it is that you're presenting to them. So I think that that's really valuable. You see, because in the training, we focus on art and science. We don't focus on manufacturers' products. Even though we have manufacturers coming in as sponsors, our focus inside the classroom is to teach people, as you said, best practices in our industry and to give them a foundational knowledge of how things behave. So we are not judgmental. We don't say one product is better than another. We don't. If we have technology that's substantial in our industry, we'll certainly highlight it. We're not going to stray away from talking about any manufacturer, but only as it relates to technology and what certain people have done either in the past, present, or future. And then when we leave the classroom, when the doors open, then our setup is now a marketing vehicle for the people who supported us. You can get brochures of the manufacturer's products. They'll be contributing swag to our efforts. We talk about them openly in other forums. But when the door closes to the class, everybody understands that what we're doing in here is creating knowledgeable people. That's what our goal is, not to promote products.
And, you know, it's really, the timing is funny on this because I was very recently at a manufacturer training. And like you said, out of a 3-day class, the first day is pretty much, let's talk about phase. Let's talk about summation, you know, and so it really, think about how much more of that class time could be spent on learning the product that the class is supposed to be teaching. You know, if people are coming in with that knowledge and so, you know, hearing that that's what the class time is spent on and hearing some of the questions that come up, you know, I was really sitting there thinking, wow, you know, the fundamentals would just be so beneficial to so many of these people because you're sort of trying to do two things at the same time. I always think about the idea of learning to operate a mixing console. So every console you walk up to, if you've never walked up to that console before, you have to say, okay, how do I add stuff to a subgroup on this console? How do I add stuff to a VCA on this console? Well, if you understand what a VCA is, if you understand what a subgroup is already, then all you have to worry about is how do I do it on this desk? But if you don't have
this desk, right.
Yeah, right. And if you don't have the foundation of what's a VCA, what's a subgroup, you're trying to learn two things at once. And it's just not as effective, and it's very frustrating for people. And if you're trying to teach someone, here's how our desk works, to take that detour and say, well, before we tell you how to route VCAs on our desk, let's talk about what VCAs are. I do see a lot of manufacturers doing that, and that's fine. But I think, like you said, to really have the student prepared to come in and say, okay, well, I understand all the concepts that are at play here. Now show me how they apply to your product. Show me how I can get a result using your product based on my knowledge, you know? And so I think that's just, it's definitely something that's really needed. And I love the mobile aspect of it too, because, you know, I was 14, 15, 16 in high school, tinkering around in our auditorium with no clue what I was doing. And, you know, I actually found, you know, there was some copies of Live Sound International up there in the booth that I would sit there and read. But to know that these sort of classes are out there, and to just, you know, you can't get on a plane and fly somewhere when you're 16. It's just not going to happen, you know. And so to that accessibility and the extension of that being, you know, well, okay, well, I can go on a website and get the content here. That's huge. And I'm just, you know, I'm really, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, we are too, you know, nothing, you know, to my knowledge, nothing has ever been attempted like this. I can't tell you how many times I second guessed myself as I was going through this process, because, you know, when you tell somebody that you're starting a training academy like this, and I'm talking about your peers, I'm talking about very, very high level people, and they come back to you in conversation, they say, thank God somebody's finally doing this. You have to stop and wonder for a second, right? It's like, are you telling me, and it's kind of rhetorical because I've thought about it so many times myself, I'm going, are you telling me that there's no formal path for somebody coming out of high school, let's say, or even somebody who, you know, has gone through university or whatever, and there's no formal path for them to start in this industry and continue on a you know, a certain graduated path to success? There's not. You go to some of the training schools that are available out there and some of the opportunities, you get a certificate, and then somebody pats you on the back just like any other, you know, academic, and says, good luck out there. And that's it. And so then you've been brought down to the same, you know, bar as everyone else. You have knowledge, but it doesn't really buy you a whole lot when you're trying to get your feet wet in this industry, because we all know that there's a lot of brotherhood and sisterhood involved in our industry, and you have to navigate those waters. And that's where the wisdom part of the school comes from, to provide you with a toolkit. Here was something we talked about really just recently that I think is great, and something that we want to do. You've been on show sites, many show sites. There's conversations that take place when you're young. You have no idea what these people are talking about. You're standing there. They're having this conversation, whether it's about system tuning or whether it's about, you know, lobby call or what, you name it. There's been plenty of conversations that you walked away from going, I have no idea what those people are talking about. So what we're going to do is create an app that is basically a glossary of common terminologies that are used in our industry that our students will have access to, especially the younger ones, when they get on a show site and they hear, you know, you're out on a tour and you're talking about laundry, you know, and you can put laundry as a search item into your app, and it'll explain to you basically what the fundamental principle is behind getting your laundry done when you're out on a tour. So, or maybe it's coherence. You know, they're talking about tuning, and somebody mentions coherence, and you go, I have no idea what they're talking about. And then you can go look at your app, and it'll bring up coherence, and you can understand. Now you can engage in that conversation a little bit better than before. Most of us would have just kind of, you know, backed into the shadows when things got too technical. And I think that apprehension stunts your growth when you don't want to learn something because you're afraid of being embarrassed because you may not know some of the fundamentals of the topic. So yeah, I mean it's a really wonderful opportunity. There's so many different mechanisms in play, and I do have to say that it's still very dynamic at this early stage as to what it'll ultimately land on. But the core morals and ethics that we operate under, which is why one of the reasons why I picked Truth in Audio as the name, is that we feel that we have to keep an obligation to our industry, and we have to keep an obligation to the people that go through our class. So as long as we stick to our ethics and our morals, as far as what we've determined is important to people in our industry, I don't think we can really fail in our process. One of the things is about Truth and Audio is that we're totally self-funded. So we don't have any investors in the company. We've I say we because my sister Bernadette, so easy to remember, Bernie and Bernadette. My parents weren't super creative. she is a longtime entrepreneur. And when I described to her what I was going to do, she asked to join. She wanted to join. She wanted to become part of this. She was very, very enthusiastic. So she's our general manager. And we collaborate on these ideas. She gives me some of the business sense and I give her some of the, you know, the out there thinking, you know, crazy ideas and stuff. And she helps me kind of make sense of it all. But we established this kind of ethical footprint that we wanted to operate under, and it's already served us on a few occasions. You know, there's been certain opportunities that have presented themselves that someone may have said, yeah, you know, go for the money, and we've declined because, as painful as it is, we don't want anybody affecting our vision of what it is that this entire company is based on. And you can see how that could easily be distorted if you are beholden to others, if you know, in a very monetary way. You know, you have somebody that's part of your decision making process, and in what I wanted to create, this just simply cannot happen.
You know, and I'll just say that I found, even in my own little corner of the world, telling the truth about technical things is often not popular. It doesn't make you friends in some cases.
Yeah.
You know, and that's conversation that I have with Keith all the time is. You know, or something that we need to fix and something that we're going to publish, or, you know, well, we got to make sure this is accurate. We got to make sure that we've checked our boxes and done our research and that we are, you know, to the best of our ability, representing things factually and correctly. And sometimes that can be a tough discussion with people, but, you know, it does bear out over time. It's the right way to go. And, you know, you get the respect of, you know, people saying, okay, well, you know, I respect what's being said here, because I know that the research has been done, and you building those critical thinking skills and just giving people these tool sets to kind of go out and kind of discover stuff on their own. And so actually, I think this is, you know, kind of coming full circle to the sandbox idea. Can you tell us a little bit about your Restomod project that we recently covered?
Yeah, I think that was very entertaining. And I think it was a real mind bender for people. So anybody who knows me as a friend knows that I am very mechanically interested. I worked on various cars. I like to work on cars. My son is a professional motorcycle racer. I built his motorcycles right down to building engines. And so I've always been very mechanically inclined. And I've also been curious, always curious about loudspeakers, how they work, how they function, so on and so forth. Now, from my world where I came from and where some of others came from, based on how old you are, loudspeakers and loudspeaker systems were a different animal, let's say 20 years ago. And you would think nothing of dragging, you know, speakers out into the parking lot and, you know, taking components out and switching stuff and trying different things to see how you could improve on the performance of a loudspeaker or build your own. I mean, remember that before the KF850, I mean, we were almost an entirely a proprietary loudspeaker industry. You know, rental companies, you know, lived and died by the loudspeakers that they produced in their own facility. Well, those days are all but gone. And sadly, so has a lot of the cowboy slash, you know, mad scientist, you know, environment that was there at the time. So nowadays we have packaged systems. Everything is packaged. So it comes packaged with the rigging, the speakers, the DSP, the amplifiers, and the manufacturers, God bless them, they don't want you to touch any of that stuff for very good reason. You know, they want consistency, they want repeatability. So yeah, I absolutely get it. But at the same time, we have to have some sort of environment where risks are taken and where things are learned and understood on a more organic level. We can't have this kind of plastic wrapper industry, or else we'll lose talent. You know, I've talked to a couple of friends from manufacturers that say they have a hard time these days finding loudspeaker technicians or loudspeaker engineers to work for them. Because where did they come from? Most of these guys running these companies or engineering departments came from that pre-20 year ago, you know, arena. So RestoMod with the Green Monster that we called it was our opportunity to really send a big shot over the bow of our industry to say, look what a bunch of gearheads could do with a jigsaw, some silicone, and a bunch of parts contributed to us by manufacturers. We're going to rebuild the sound system. We're going to take it from its late 80s roots, and we're going to apply modern technology to it for no other reason than to see what happens, right? Well, what could possibly go wrong is the question.
So, Bernie, how did you end up picking the 750?
That had a great little bit of history. I can't tell you all the details because I don't want to go too deep into the veins of EAW. But it was a conversation that took place quite a long time ago. It was in 2007, I think. It was like my first year working for EAW, or my second year. And Dave Gunness and I sat one day, and I'll abbreviate this. We sat one day and thought, what if? You know, what if we took what we know about loudspeakers right now and we apply it to the 750? Because it was always a really, really cool concept and a cool idea. This high Q point source type system, you know, on the tail of things like, you know, turbo flashlight and, you know, the EVX array and stuff like that. And it was like, this is a really cool design, and still nobody has anything like it today. In this, you know, it was a 35 degree by 35 degree cabinet, and most companies were deploying it like a pumpkin. So in 2007, we talked about it and then looked at each other and said, nah, you know, EAW would never do something like that. And then, you know, when I was looking for marketing opportunities for the school, and then my keen interest in doing things mechanical and acoustical, it dawned on me again. So I wanted to do something, but it completely morphed now into this RestoMod idea. And the first person I called, of course, was Dave Gunness. And I said, is this crazy? And he goes, this will be a lot of fun. This will be a huge amount of fun. So we basically greenlighted the project and got a bunch of people involved in it and took, you know, all modern technology, as I said, and stuffed it into these vintage 750 cabinets with great success.
Anyway, I just wanted to give a quick shout out because I know you want to. You got the rig from Chris Anderson, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Chris Anderson. So again, this school operates on a really large collaborative effort. And, you know, we needed the boxes. We didn't have the boxes, nor did we have the budget to buy the boxes. But I knew that if we worked with the right people, that we would find the funding to be able to do this. And yeah, Chris Anderson stepped up to the plate in the conversation I had with him. Everybody was grinning from ear to ear, and it's like, I'll get you the boxes. And he did. And we ended up getting, 12? I think it was 8 KF750s and then 4 of the KF755s to start the project.
The other thing that I loved about that in reading, Bernie, the article that you wrote, which Keith will post on the podcast page, right?
Yeah.
Talking about the process of you going through this whole operation and saying, okay, well, what are we going to keep? What are we going to try to upgrade? And, you know, you get these great little moments where you're like, oh, well, now the horn doesn't fit, you know?
So I
love that because I think that can be really discouraging to people who are, you know, like me, sitting in my basement fiddling with and you go, oh man, I'm such an idiot, the horn doesn't fit. Well, guess what? That, you know, you're never past that point. Like, you can have some of the greatest minds in the industry on this stuff, and they can still end up in a situation where the horn doesn't fit. So it's okay. Just get out there and get your hands dirty and see what you can come up with, you know?
Yeah. Get the saw out. I mean, you should have seen what, you know, how that whole project went down. I built that whole system with the help of a few other people in the back parking lot of Sound Image Productions in Hayward. You know, out on the pavement, we're out there and we're grinding, cutting, checking, you know, calling, and you know, some incredible things happened along the way. I mean, we used that that new Celestion axi-periodic device, which was, you know, without doubt the biggest deviation from the original enclosure. And I learned at LVI, where we launched the product, and we, not the product, I shouldn't use that word, because one thing is clear is that these are marketing exercises. We're not building this stuff to sell it or do anything with it. It's just for promotion of the school, which is something that I think caught a lot of people off guard too. You know, why would you go through all this effort and not make any money on this? And I'm going, well, it depends on what your vision of making money is. You know, for us, it was a clear, as I said, shot over the bow of the industry to say, look at the minds of, you know, look who's coming together under this banner. Look who's willing to put their name out there. Look who's willing to contribute and be part of this thing that we've created. And that was the money for me, was sending that message to our industry. But getting back to the Celestion product, which Celestion graciously contributed, that device fit in the back box of the KF750 with literally, I would say, less than 2 millimeters of clearance. And so getting back to what you were saying, pure dumb luck. There is absolutely no way you would have looked at that device and said that it was going to fit in the configuration that we used it in. But if you don't try, you're never going to know. And we learned a lot about, you know, that speaker system and what we did. It was truly a monster. Robert Scoville and I, and you'll see in the articles that, that Robert was ultimately the sound engineer who ran the system for us at LDI with some really astonishing stuff. He came back after, the experience and, you know, just completely elated with some of the things that he heard, you know, that he has not experienced before. This is, again, dumb luck. This had nothing to do with any prior experience. As a matter of fact, the Celestion device is an example. That was the first time that device has been heard in public. Nobody's ever heard that device in a sound system before. And I didn't even know this until I spoke to one of their guys at the show. I was blown away. We're the very first company that has ever displayed this radical device to the public. So we learned so much, and that was the key, right? That was the key, was to learn and to understand what could be done and what you can, you know, trip up in. And, you know, like one of the things that set us back for quite a while was the diameter of the 12-inch BEMA drivers we used were slightly larger than the original drivers used in the cabinet by about a millimeter, which meant that we had to enlarge every single hole by a millimeter. And, but, you know, it was stuff like that. At the end of the day, it was fine, and it was obviously was well worth the effort. But, you know, I walked away with it, as did everyone else in the group, with this really shit-eating grin about what we had just done, you know, and we pumped the brakes on it too. Like Robert and I talked about this at LDI, and we said, look, here we are in a parking lot with a 30-year-old PA, and we have all of these manufacturers here trying to sell their stuff. We have to be respectful of that. Now this thing's got throttle. It has incredible throttle. We tried it the first night, you know, just in our sound checking and stuff. And we pumped the brakes on it. And we said, no, let's just keep this reasonable. We don't want to step on the toes of potential, you know, manufacturer sponsors for the school. But I could tell you that thing has got some capabilities, and it was a heck of a lot of fun.
So is there going to be any other opportunity to hear it?
Yeah, we see that, there again, it has to be a marketing opportunity. It can't be, you know, we don't want to just throw it out there, because the scenario we don't want is for somebody to say, well, I'm not going to buy that new line array from X brand. Why don't I just put, you know, a fraction of that money into replicating what these guys did and go out and use that for the next 2 years. Well, that's counterproductive for us, right? That's not the intent. There will be no design, you know, we won't make it for anybody. None of our projects will. But we will gladly kind of take you along the journey and show you the things that we did. I mean, Dave Gunness, you know, redid the enclosure with his, you know, with his FIR technology at Fulcrum, as he would have done with any of his own loudspeakers. He did not shortchange it. He put everything into it. And of course, in this day and age, that's the deal breaker, right? So that's, or the deal maker, is if you have access to that highest level of DSP technology, you can take some of this stuff and bring it up to a level that's more in line with today's standards. And that's the stuff, of course, that will never be released to the public. But yeah, we want opportunities. We're craving another opportunity to bring this thing out, because it has a lot more to do. It has a lot more work to do. We're just looking for the right opportunities to do it. We thought that maybe the release of the Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, the new Queen movie, may provide an excellent opportunity for us to do some special display, you know, that is based on Queen. And, you know, we have this old PA. We thought, you know, a couple of hundred Parcans, right? you know, and then have, you know, someone mix some Queen material on it. You know, the audience should know that the material that we used on the system at LDI was Def Leppard. It was their original 1983 tape recordings from the LA Forum show. And nobody had ever heard those in public before. And both Robert and I are friends with members of the band, and we were able to access the entire show on tracks, bounced down to, you know, moved over to digital. And that's what Robert mixed at LDI. So the audience there got so much entertainment value. If it wasn't the PA, if it wasn't Robert using a Gamble EX56 with his original soundcheck setup, then it certainly had to be hearing Def Leppard from 1983 at the peak of their popularity, just tearing it up. There was so much entertainment value, and I feel bad that so many people who probably went to AES, don't know nothing against AES, but man, you missed something incredibly unique. I do hope we get an opportunity to do something again.
Well, great.
But we have more more projects in the queue, by the way. That's mm-hmm. That was only the first one. There are several other that are queued up right now, one that we're working on. So we'll be at NAMM. We have a booth at NAMM this year, and we're also involved with you guys.
Yep.
With the loudspeaker shootout. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The yes, the official name is Loudspeaker Showcase at NAMM, powered by Live Sound International.
So
yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, Ernie,
it's never a shootout.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing how often it is called that. You know, we call it in other forums and formats, we call it a demo, and now it's being called a showcase at NAMM. But every other person I talk to says, "So, what's going on with the shootout?" So, you know, that's always going to be the thing, even though it's actually not a shootout. It's not a loudness war or anything like that. But anyway, yes. That is coming to the arena at the upcoming NAMM show in Anaheim. So I'm looking forward to that. I wish we could sneak in the Restomod 750 rig into that, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll have our booth there. Like I said, we have a smaller Restomod project, which is quite unique, that we're going to have for the booth, because, you know, we're in a small booth, so we obviously can't stack a giant PA in there. But you know, I mean, we do have a 40-foot show hauler with a rather large trailer, that we are able to move around. So, you know, if anybody wants to take advantage of it and maybe collaborate on something with us, I invite them to reach out to me at, b2@truthandaudio.com with hyphens and throw it at me. And, you know, we'll certainly consider what we can do next with it. It's certainly something that I don't want to see mothballed, because I think as a promotional tool for the school and technology in general, again, understanding what we did and how we did it, and, you know, the nuances of that, is just going to illuminate what manufacturers are doing with modern technology and how we kind of got to where we are now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, Bernie, I think we're kind of running up against the clock here, so we will let you go with our biggest thanks so much for everything here, all of the great stuff you're doing and for sharing the details of it and explaining things. And anyway, I encourage anyone and everyone listening to this to go to our page, and there'll be links to all sorts of cool things that Bernie's up to, including a link to truth-in-audio.com. And so follow those links and find out more. Thanks so much, Bernie.
Thank you, guys. Have an outstanding day.
Yep, thank you, too. And Keith, I think before we go real quick, as you just mentioned, that we are now officially on iTunes. And also, if you're on Android, we are on the Podcast Addict application. So regardless of your platform, you can now find us, subscribe, and make sure you hear all the new episodes.